Okay. So now what's changing, what is the changing over here is the nachash element, or the instinctual component.
But this is the creation story. In the creation story, so the Torah is highlighting man, breaking man down into various components. Okay? Now, we haven't explained really why it does so. But let's take that for granted for the time being. But once it chooses to do so, with regard to explaining that it is the nachash which causes us to sin, so then it follows the story is going to be the story about the changes that occur, the so-called punishments, is going to follow through in the same fashion. It's not going to switch in the gears, you know, the whole story. Right? The only thing is, you'll ask, well, why did the Torah choose this method in the first place? But my heart, that's the question. But you can't bring it in at the middle of the story. I mean, this is for example, a Hobbit of thought, but once an author or a playwright chooses to use a certain method of presenting his story, you know, depicting his characters in certain ways, whatever the case may be. Let's say it's new animals, like an animal or something like that. So now he has the reason for doing so. But once he does so, so then everything that follows, he's not going to suddenly switch, and now we're just talking about people. Now everything, whatever, in other words, if they're going to have to travel somewhere, whatever they're going to do is going to be, that's going to be the form. So it would seem to me that it makes sense over here, too. That once the Torah is depicting things, violating the nachash, then you have to translate. You have to use your judgment. Now translate it back into Adam. That occurs. Now we know what the cause of chesed is. Yeah, now it's Adam. We know which component in Adam. So
the question of why God would punish the nachash, again, it's with relationship to man. It means that God brought about certain changes in the nature of the instinctual as a result of man's sin. The idea that God would do this with relationship to man, it makes more sense. This only lends credence to the idea that the nachash is not an independent force. Because if it's an independent force, I mean, there's a lot of problems with this, but then why should it be punished? I assume that's what it was doing, what it was supposed to be doing. So then it would be more difficult to understand. And if you're going to say, well, it's punished in relationship to man, but then that, if you, and you're learning it's an external nachash, we never see any further encounter between that external nachash. We never see another case in the Torah where that external nachash seeks to, to trap man, entrap man. Okay, let's now go on to the next thing. What does it mean, al gechon cho telech, that you will move on your belly, and the ofer tochal kol yimei chayecha, and you will eat dust all the days of your life. What does that mean? Snakes, we know, do travel on their bellies. They slide. They slither along. What does that mean with regard to the yetzer hara? Okay, and also, what does it mean with ofer tochal? But one thing is, it was already established that from here on in, man requires an inhibiting factor, which he did not require before, and that is the powerful emotion of shame, which makes him feel guilty or shameful about the influence. That already has come into being. That's part of man. That is not the nachash. Although they do affect each other, what you're saying. Clearly that the existence of conscience will now affect the operations of the nachash. Right? And the nachash will affect the conscience. I think over here, though, it's best to see if we can understand it in terms of man's instinctual life. I think that's what intrinsically, because that's the comparison with regard to the animals. The animals are basically instinctual. And the way we set it up in terms of what a curse would be, it's in terms of achieving what they need. In terms of the achieving what one needs. There would lie the line of comparison. Sforno says, Al Gechon Kotele, Shetasik Mizanosecha Bitsar. You will acquire your food. Now, food over here would mean a necessity with pain. Which means to say, that's the analogy. Perhaps it's difficult, it's like slow. He's taking this idea of traversing on your belly, not as a blessing, which I think everyone will agree with. The other animals can run, and you can. Motility, your ability to move towards the goal. So we're talking over here is the capacity to move from one place to another. I mean, you could have a smooth sailing, or it could be very difficult to get to your objective. Now here he's taking it to mean that in man it's going to be much more difficult. And the quotes of Chazal Because man's needs are much more complicated. Man's needs now have become extremely complicated. This I think we can all relate to. He says, he quotes Chazal, Kama tirchos tarach adam harishon, how much labor did Adam harishon have to go through, achalo achal pach, until he, because now he can't, well, you see later on, that by the sweat of your brow, he's tying in with that idea, by the sweat of your brow shall you eat bread. We haven't explained that yet. The God has said you'll eat the grass in the field. But you see that human needs are much more difficult to achieve. And animal needs are much simpler in all the areas of the instinct, even with regard to food. Now, food is not so simple because man doesn't. See, now that. I think it's all due, by the way, to the Nachash. I don't know that it is true that it's because of the existence of a conscience. But the very Nachash itself, the emotional component of man, is what we should. There's the essential change. And remember what we said before with Yetan of Chut, that the instinctual was really extraneous. The basic drive, the basic thrust of man's energy was towards the good, was towards Chachma. And the capacity to be involved in the instinctual required an external stimulus. See? Now he's internalizing. So all the energy is now going towards the instinctual. Now when all the energy is going towards the instinctual, he can't be satisfied by the instinctual itself. So now it's taking the instinctual and making the instinctual into something fantasy. It's got to have all these exquisite characteristics, like eating. You know, he can't just eat ordinary food. So he's got to have specialties and, you know, dishes and connoisseurs and restaurants. And so eating becomes a whole art form. People spend their whole lives involved in this type of thing. And then now you go to everything else in man. All of man's instinctual needs are very complicated, even if it's just clothing. We see already an indication that he needed kastazor, God gave him kastazor, fig leaf horns and on. And then even the house is not just a protection, it's an eye requires all different types of, elements, accoutrements and so forth. And even with regard to the, let's take the sexual for example, you can't go directly. I mean, animal, that's a fine example of the instinctual. Let's take the sexual. An animal goes directly to its objective. Right? It just has its mate, and it goes directly to it, and it goes, and that's the end of that. But it doesn't operate that way in man. Then it has to be, let's discard it. That's what, to me, that's the concept of the snake. It's like, you can't go directly, it goes around and around. A person cannot do that. You know, the whole scene, a person has to go, he goes dating, or he goes, even if he's interested in the sexual, he can't just go and have sex. He has to go and make the lead for something else. You know, and that's why there's this whole thing of romance, and then going to dinner, and going through a whole rigmarole, and so on and so forth. And all these things are basically disguising, you see, of the sexual. So what it revolves around. But in order to get what he wants, he's got to go through tremendous amount, and he has to deal with the other person. He has to hide what he's really after, and he has to cover it up, and he has to wine and dine, and he has to woo, and he has to cover it, and so forth, until he finally will get there. That's the way it operates. A person can't just go with a girl and, excuse my expression, but we can't just say, this is what I'd like to do, unless you, of course, the interesting thing with a prostitute, but that basically doesn't say, it's not what a person imagines is the basic. There's no idea if the person would not regard that as psychologically satisfying.
That's love.
Not love. Yeah. Now love has come into the picture of a different kind. And see, it's an interesting thing. It could be that part of that is what would love have been like. It seems that he was very happy with Chava when he first met her and all, but I think it was a different type of a thing. Now it's rooted in the excessive amount of instinctual energy that's directed towards the thing, and the thing itself can't satisfy it. So it's got to become a fantasy. So that's why he never goes in. That's why he's going on his belly, traversing on his belly. He can't go directly. Round about. He can't go directly towards the thing. Now, the upper tochal, on the basis of assuming this is the case, and I've stretched, in other words, this for now, I believe is saying for them, he's keeping it to the idea of bread. Man only achieves his needs with great tircha, with great effort. and he quotes the Chazal about bread. And I'm taking it right there, I'm extending it to all of the instinctual needs. Now, if that is the case, it's all one idea. The upper tokov, what is that? A rational person would come to the conclusion that the instinctual, you see, what's that saying? A rational person would study the situation and study the pasuk and see whether this pasuk, is this pasuk itself could make a person wise, could make a philosopher out of a person. Because most people are pursuing this. This is exactly what they're pursuing them on. They're pursuing the instinctual, the pathosize. I mean, there's two things in there that you pointed out. There's for the purpose, the tamoil is driving on the nefesh. Yes, the fantasy. It's not just, no one is pursuing an instinct. What people are pursuing is a fantasy which is built up around an instinct. And so it's changed its appearance. It looks like something else. And that's what they're chasing. So most people do associate the good life with this type of a lifestyle, the playboy life. You know, the playboy life is based upon all of these underlying glorifications of all of these pleasures. But if he studied this project, I mean, the reality is such that it would help a person because it would dissuade him. He would realize how futile the endeavor is. That A, it consumes all of his energy. It's not a simple type of thing. It consumes all of his energy. But the more significant thing is the upper tofa. What's the upper tofa in light of this explanation? In that sense, it fulfills the requirement of being a curse, but a curse which is ultimately for our benefit. It has to be this way. Given man's change, that his basic drive is not so far. The opposite guy, he spends all the time, he gets the bread, right? He harvests in the field, and he grinds it, and then he makes the dough, and then he bakes the bread, and it smells delicious, and it doesn't taste like afar. Right? It doesn't taste like afar. Yeah, I would ask the question, why afar? I can understand. You're telling me it's very difficult this morning. So what are you telling me it's upper?
In terms of playwright,
the idea of the upper toko means that you don't really, pre the fate it was different though. So I'd like to explain, pre the fate, before the fate, it would not be correct to say that you're always depressed. Then you would have enjoyed the physical enjoyment. And this is an amazing idea that people make a tremendous mistake about. Who enjoys the physical activities more? The person who has all of his energy tied into the physical, that's the basis of his existence? Or no, it's an amazing kind of a thing. The one whose energy is not towards the physical. Who enjoys, in other words, the person really is holy when he gets up in the morning, I mean, his whole day revolving around his physical activity, what he's going to eat, this is an important thing for him. And other physical activities. So then, he will enjoy it. The more involved you are in it, as you know, the less you enjoy it. Because the nature of the thing, the nature of the physical enjoyment, it essentially demands a certain state. And that is a state of hunger. The person's hungry, that's when you enjoy it. The person that gets up in the morning, and he's involved and he has work to do. He goes out there in the job and works and so forth. His mind is preoccupied. Let's assume it's some type of an enjoyable type of thing. He's totally preoccupied. He's not thinking at all about what he's going to eat and so on and so forth. So his energy is totally directed towards what he's involved in right now. Then he stops, then the feelings of hunger come upon him. He stops, he rests, and he's eating because he's in a state of hunger, so then he really enjoys every thing. In fact, you'll see people that have been deprived, well, of course, I'm not just touching because of because they're hungry, because they've been deprived, but in general, the more a person has something, and the more he's involved in it, the less he really enjoys it, because since he fantasizes about it, and since he builds it up into his mind as being a pleasure in his own right, so he's expecting a certain thing from it, which he really can't provide. There's the disappointment factor, tremendous disappointment factor that people experience. The more you fantasize about something, whether it be a vacation, whether it be a car, that's why you find this phenomenon of the phenomenon of disappointment. Disappointment is a very prevalent phenomenon in life, as opposed to satisfaction. How many times you can check your own experiences, were you satisfied or disappointed? Did you live up to your expectations? most of the time, I said people are disappointed. And the times when it's usually, you see, it's a pasuk that we recite, one of the psukim that we recite before the blowing of the shofar. Mm-hmm. The true enjoyments are always unanticipated. Because sas anochi alim masacha, motei shalora, which means I rejoice on your words, God, which is Torah, Gavranah, right? Tilam. Kemotei shalol rav. As one who finds great. Now, shalol is booty. It's, spoil. Like when you find, say, war. When you win a war, you have spoil. So that is the analogy. What's the analogy between the enjoyment of Torah? Kemotei, like I found great booty, spoil, treasure. See the elements.
Surprise.
Yeah, surprise.
I had to recognize that. Surprise part. Don't tell the person about it. That's what it's going to be.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's a good point. Yeah. But you see, that's the enjoyment. In Torah, you don't have that. You're not anticipating. You don't have that anticipation in Torah. It's quite the contrary. Is that that's why Torah, by its nature, is the perfect activity for man. He never gets tired. He'll never get tired of it. Whereas other activities, you get tired of them after a while. If you're eating steak every day, you're going to get tired of it. Because you know exactly there's something new. It requires a certain newness. But in Torah, there's another enjoyment in the booty, in that it's, you weren't looking forward to it, you weren't anticipating it. So when it came, it's a complete joy. There's no, the joy is total, the joy is complete. There's no pain involved. There was no pain, and then of course, there's not the pain of the anticipation. Because anticipation is pain. The whole state, in other words, that you're in prior to the attainment is not enjoyable. Because you're anticipating it, and you're worrying about it, and so forth, and you have anxiety about it. So it detracts from the experience. And also, the enjoyment is really complete. It's inherently enjoyable. The experience is inherently enjoyable. It's not because it's a release of a certain tension. Now, it does not lead. See, in man, this capacity of overestimating in his mind the greatness of the satisfaction produces upper. That's why if his energy is totally tied up in the instinctual, then he's never going to be happy. Because he's going to be disappointed, because he's always comparing the, he is taking something, which has the capacity to produce a certain amount of satisfaction. And he's building it up in his mind as something which is going to produce a greater satisfaction, so the end result is going to be disappointing. That's the famous case of Amram and Tamar. A beautiful illustration of it. And from there you have the whole philosophy of life, is that I'm not so madly in love with Tama. She was related to him, but he was permitted because it was a complicated situation. It was if I was Torah situation, whatever. It was like a sister, but it wasn't really a sister. I loved her. He fell madly in love with her. And like he was sick. He was sick of love. So he conspired. He had a bad friend. A clever but bad. And he conspired to seduce her in a situation where she would think he was sick and she came to make him some food and whatever, and then he raped her basically. And it says that afterwards he had tremendous hatred. All the love turned into hatred, and the hatred that he felt for her afterwards was greater than the love. So it was really, alright, but how it turns into hatred is something else. I'm not going to do that right now, but the point is, clearly it was What triggered her up was this tremendous disappointment. Well, that, I believe, is the idea of the year. That there's an essential change now due to the fact of Yetzer Hara Mubifnim. And not to discount the prime emphasis over here is on the Yetzer Hara. That's enough. Due to the change, it will create a situation where he's going to traverse on his rebellion to get his necessities is going to be much better for us. Of course, the person's a philosopher, he works on this, you know, I mean, it's guiding him in a certain direction. The point is, no one's saying that you should live this kind of a lifestyle, but that's the natural tendency. It's going to lead you towards a certain lifestyle which is based upon the glorification of the physical. And if that is the case, then the more fancy it is, the more difficult it is. Again, like you see in every respect, like you see it today, like in weddings today. It's much more complicated because it's got to satisfy many, many needs, right? Man, how much tikkun and anxiety and aggravation you have to go through until you can put together a room with some tables and some food and some music, and that's it. It's not that big a deal. But now, every step, everything has the invitation. You're taking things from the physical and you're glorifying. When you're glorifying the physical, and everything becomes a need, which is not really a need, so then it becomes extremely difficult. You can't get started. And every flower arrangement and every dish has to be done in a certain way until you can finally get a little enjoyment. And then when you finally get it, it's not worth it. It's just not worth it. That's the interpretation, I believe. It's a whole philosophy of life over here, just in this one topic. And I believe I'm basing myself on this one. The essential term in the pasuk is v'yachar tochal. We're talking about man's instinctual existence. This is the tendency, of course, but since he has intelligence and bechira, he can learn the lesson. Of course, it'll never be the same. It'll never be the same as it was. It's a really different reality. But when the Yetzer was in Chutz, when the Yetzer was really external, was an incidental in his life, was not his primary drive, see, then he was much better off. Then he experienced enjoyment because his drive was towards the attainment of Chachma, and Chachma is an inherently enjoyable for man. It's not enjoyable because of certain pains that he's in, certain needs. It's inherently enjoyable. And when he did encounter the physical, it was enjoyable too, because it was basically, in other words, it was even his physical experience was in line with his true reality, the satisfaction of a need. And when a person is thirsty and he has a drink of water, he feels very good. Because he's not then all he expects is the quenching of his thirst, and that's basically all water is going to do for him. So he feels very good about it. You see, but when a person is caught up in any kind of crazy thing, like how he spends his whole life chasing after the perfect glass of wine, so then he's not going to enjoy the wine. He's not going to, you see what I'm saying? Because he's taking something which in reality is geared towards one type of a level of satisfaction, and in his mind he's trying to build it up into something else. The same is true with regard to relationships, with regard to women, with regard to the sexual. I mean, it does have the capacity to produce a certain amount of pleasure, but if he's in line with the reality of what it can do, so then he'll be satisfied. But since he's not in line, since he's taking something and building it up into something else, so then two results. One, he's going to have to travel on his belly, have to work very, very hard. And B, the enjoyment when he does get it, if he gets it, will be dust. It will be a disappointment. That's the idea of Havel Havelim, vanity. That's exactly the idea of Havel Havelim, that it's Havel. It means that it's vanity. It's that sense of emptiness. It's empty. But subjectively, you chase after it because you are invested. In other words, the appeal, the glitter that it seems to have does not stem from anything within itself. It's from something you've projected onto it. So therefore, it only follows that when you experience it, there's going to be disappointment, because then you're going to be able to realize two differences in Gan Eden. Because first of all, there's another benefit that God provided him. You didn't have to work. There's not enough work. What's that? Well, I'll go to Shamra. Yeah, but that's a different type of work. To guard it, like this. If you're living in a palace, and all your needs are provided for you, right? But you have to lock the doors at night, you have to guard it. That's different than when you have to go out there every day and toil, sweat of your bread. That's
just not producing
you're not producing it, you just have to, right, you have to protect it. You couldn't let it go fall apart. I didn't really explain that. Like, what's the role of Avdol Lashamra? What was that? It seems like that was necessary. To guard it and protect it. Okay, but first of all, the nature of his physical needs were much simpler, easier to satisfy, right? And the things that he needed were provided by God, because it was God's will that he exists his whole existence should be involved in wisdom and chachma. As a result of, that's what life was supposed to be like, but as a result of the sin, he changed his nature.
And enmity means, we'll explain what it means.
It's a certain type of a low-grade state of
warfare.
Not warfare, but hostility, I would say. You could use the term warfare, but it's too strong of a term.
Yeah.
Right. There's sort of like a Cold War, where you're not actually fighting, but you're not friendly either. There's a state of hostility. Bencha v'en Isha, between you and between the woman. V'en Zaracha, and between your seed, v'en Zara, and between her seed. Okay, that's one thing. Hu Yishivcha Rosh, he will crush you on the head. The answer to Shupanu, okay, and you will attack him on the heel. Now, it's very, very difficult. Obviously, you can't take it simplistically or literally. So there are two ideas we have to talk about. What is the first, what was the concept of the Eva? Again, in terms of the way we establish it, in terms of the Nachash. And then the idea of Yishubcha.
And also, why does it have to say,
yeah, the Eva Ashes Beincha. Well, then it goes from the family to the master. Who you should call is the reference to the man.
Right.
Well, that's okay. Because
but why say
Zara?
Yeah, but why are you making the first
one? And Zara is because woman is there.
Yeah.
Sorry?
First of all, who is the who?
Who is the who that's being referred to?
Who is he?
Who's the one that's going to be stepping on your head?
Zara.
Yeah, but Zara will be as, Zevith. Is going to be both male and female. What do you say it should be Cain? Is that what you're saying? Oh, good question. But if I'm going to analyze the pasuk, the main issues in the pasuk are the concept, the significant issue is the concept of Eva, is an establishment of a relationship of Eva. And then there's this idea of Yishuvcha. Okay? Those are the two main ideas. Now, how it's expressed and why it's between you and your seed and his seed and all that, I think those will come afterwards. Then we'll try and fit that in. Alright? Plus you have to understand that this Eva is a result of the Chet. That is, before the Chet, there was no Eva. I assume. This whole phenomenon would not have taken place.
It's not in the story. It's both.
Okay, so, okay. Well, that I don't know. I don't agree. The way we interpreted it. But these are the dead. They still speak. They still communicate.
But I don't do Eva.
I'm not so sure. That I don't know. Yeah. It seems, in other words, like this, that you're no longer going to be in a state of harmony. In other words, this would not be true. This would not be true with regard to an animal. To say that there's a state of hostility, state of tension, you know, between the it's instinctual. That is because that's exactly what it is. It is instinctual. That's its essence. Its essence is to be an instinctual being. So there's nothing holding it back. It's in line, the instinctual is in line with its nature, so that is the personality. But in man, that'll never be the case. In man, there'll never be a harmonious situation where the instinct will be allowed to free reign. It exists in man, but it exists and it's in a state of hostility because it's another force. That's not the nature of man. That's not the nature of man, to be an instinctual being. There's another side to me. There's another side.
Want to mention the counter.
There's counter forces. Of course, it's not just the superego. The superego, even without the superego, it would still be true because that's not the essence of man. Man has a reality to him. The instinctual has nothing to do with reality. The instinctual is driving him in a certain direction. And that's not in line with his nature. He's not an animal, and he has another component which is completely different, which means that he can't go along with the instinct. If he does so, it's going to be destroyed. It can't exist. So in order for him to exist, he has to have a state of there's got to be a control. There's a battle, but of course It's not so simple. We'll see. But that's the idea of Ava. Now you'll ask, if that's the case, that should always be so, due to the very definition of man. Right? It would seem that this stems not from the faith, but from the very definition of man. That man is a very unique type of being. That's why the Chazal, that the Nasa, that God consulted with the court, and they voted not to create man. There's no possibility. I mean, because man defies the rules of human logic. Only divine wisdom could have determined that such a being should exist, because in terms of our logic, it doesn't make sense. Okay, it's a contradictory kind of being. Is it an intellectual being? If so, then the instincts indeed take it away from its purpose. What are you instincts for? Is it an instinctual being? So then why do you give it its own account? It seems to be a contradiction. What's the point of having such a creature? Only divine wisdom is why this would be suggested. Okay? So then the question is, so the Ava would seem to come with the territory. It should be a natural result of the fact that we have to be being. And why is it coming into the picture only as a result of the faith? That's the question I would ask. Eric says the answer is that the way man was created, the Yetzer Hara was part of his makeup, but was so in a external manner. It wasn't an internal necessity. So therefore was not a force which threatened him, with which we have to... You see, if that's the case, it would not have been a state of Ava. It's only when it became internalized. Because as long as it was Levuchud, it didn't interfere with his basic drive. His basic drive was towards the attainment of Chachma, right? And he only was interested in the instinctual when there was an external stimulus, so there would be no problem. So he would not be in conflict with it. It's only when it becomes a part of him, in a deeper sense, you see, it becomes an integral component where his basic drive, that's when he can't, that's when conflict comes into the picture. That's when conflict is the essence of his existence. See? So now, that's the first idea of Ava. And that itself is a curse. So after living in a state of Ava, when, you know, by definition you're in a state of conflict, different parts of the personality, that's not a good situation to be in. Now, what is the next thing? Third, depicting the Yetzer, the instinct, the Zohar-e personality over here in the United Nations, presented its case. In reality, it's not that way. I mean, it's just a force. It's an instinctual force. It's not like... But the Torah is depicting it that way. It can't have its way. It has an agenda. It wants to get its way, but it's being held down. You see? So there's a state of a warfare between the two. You have to understand that. That's how the Torah depicts it. As though it were two neighbors and they're constantly fighting over something. That's what it means. In other words, it's not a harmonious existence. The instinctual in man does not manifest itself in a harmonious fashion, as opposed to any other being. And an animal is very harmonious. If you were to describe, it's one given that it has the proper environment and circumstances, and it's able to express, to manifest its instinctual makeup, so then it's very harmonious, very happy. It's not at war. It's not a being who's at war with itself, so to speak. And man, that's not the case. Man cannot live that way. The way he's constructed, the instinctual force in him meets with opposing forces and creates a state of tension. So you're always going to be in a state of tension. Again, the mere existence of that man is instinctual, does not in and of itself create the conflict. As long as it's of course, then it's harmonious again. It's harmonious because the energy is not tied up to the instinctual. So you have the instinctual, but the energy is not fixated there. The energy is tied up somewhere else. And it relates to the instinctual only because of a extraneous factor. So that's harmonious. But it's only when the change occurs, and now the energy is fixated towards the instinctual, that the conflicts emerge, because he can't live that way. If he's going to live that way, he's going to be an animal. He's going to encounter... That's not his personality, though. He can't be that way, so therefore there's opposing forces. Aside from conscience, just the reality itself. He knows he has to live in the world of reality, and he just can't do that. He must put limits. So he's not going to be happy. He merely faces this dilemma. Okay, he's got instincts and they create me. So if he isn't satisfied, then he's unhappy because he's unsatisfied. On the other hand, if he does satisfy, then he encounters the consequences, so he's unhappy again. So either way you go, you're going to be unhappy. The Torah is addressing it to the snake is because every force is seeking the gratification. The way God constructed it, it's seeking gratification. And this will not be allowed. That's why it's a curse to the snake. It will not be allowed to have what it really wants. What does it really want? It really wants the woman. It's the objective. It's the sum of energy seeking satisfaction. It's energy seeking satisfaction. It's going to be frustrated. That's why the Torah speaks of it that way, as though it were a personality that would experience this thing as being a punishment. But in reality, you know, it's not. It's a force. Okay? In an analogy, it's like a guerrilla warfare. You know, like when you have a small band, you know, rather than fighting against the mighty army, you know, like the Maccabees, whatever. So they can't fight them head on. They can't attack the army head on. Right? But then they have to have guerrilla sneak attacks. You know, like they attack in their places of vulnerability, where they're not expecting it. A convoy, you know, an outpost here, an outpost there. You know, that's the okay. In other words, they've repressed you. You can't come out in the open and fight against them. It's always good, by the way, when you're trying to explain it, to think of an analogy. So I would say that this follows through. Now it's describing the nature of the conflict. That the Rosh always refers to the open, the manifest character of the drive. Now, see, it works on two different levels over here. Let's take the simple. On the simple level, Zev says, that man will fight you. Will fight you in terms of your basic desires. You know, the basic desire to kill. He's a fighter on that. He's not going to have that. To steal, to kill, the sexual, and so forth. I mean, if the true desire of the instinct is allowed to manifest itself, then man is in fighting itself. That's Rosh. Rosh means the head. What it really wants. And at deeper level, though, I think it's more than that. I think it's talking about the phenomenon of repression that takes place even before the game begins. You're repressed because you don't even get to see the true nature of your the power of the instinctual force, what the psychologist refers to as the id, because it's been repressed. And the only time you get to see it is in dreams. In order to survive, what we're dealing with in terms of the instinct is already something which has been transformed into something else. The true nature of the desire, of the id, of what it really is all about, is the Chazal indicates that. Lasid level, when tzaddikim will see the power of the id, they'll be amazed at how they were able to overcome it. Because the true character of all the instinctual desires, incestuous desires, sadistic desires to kill, and so forth. These are the real desires of the infant. They've been repressed. That's how they'll manifest itself to you in your mind. A person denies it, in fact, and he has it. That's denial. I mean, that's what people that undergo analysis, because you have strange types of feelings you can't account for, hatred and so forth. But the truth of the matter is, though, that where this comes out is in dreams. In dreams, you'll be astounded sometimes to see yourself doing things that you cannot in any way associate with yourself. Whether it be of an aggressive nature, whether it be of a sexual nature, a person can in a dream can see himself doing things which in his waking life is horrifying. You can't believe it, that's him. Okay? But it's him that had the dream. It's not coming in from outer space. Something within him, right? So it's not a nevuah, his own instinct have produced it. So he's getting, in dreams, you have to know the philosophy of psychology, why it works that way. In dreams, there's basically a lessening of the repressing forces. So it's possible, and even so, it's still, right, it's still the sky. even the sleeper person is well defended. But man needs a tremendous defense against the power of the instinct. But without using that type of, I think that's indicated in the pasuk of Rosh. Because Rosh means it's submerged. He's submerged, he's crushed you, you've been repressed. But even that part which does emerge into consciousness, it's still going
to be a
battle. Yeah, the battle. However, so you will not have your way. You're already going to exist in a truncated kind of a form. You're going to be crushed, you're going to be repressed, you're going to be, denied what it is that you want. But you will have a way. That's the battle. I mean, the battle requires, you see, the battle requires two things. Because if you could, if man could totally succeed in wiping him out, so there's no enmity. But it won't be that way. You will, there's a door left open, and that door is the heel. What is the heel? The heel is that you can get around these oppressive forces. That's why I was saying before that this thing about the imagination in romance, that is the power of the Yetzara. It has, that's okay. He doesn't see it. He doesn't expect it. It attaches itself to other things. He had a say that's the nature of the battle. Because in spite of the fact that you've been crushed, you're not going to quit. Because it's a sum of energy seeking fulfillment. So it's an impossibility. It has to... Now, if it cannot... The problem is, if it cannot attain satisfaction through the direct channel, it's going to seek alternative channels. And it's going to attach itself to other types of things. And therefore, even mitzvah, even when a person is involved, that's okay. You don't see that. You see, you don't see the many different ways in which. So even when you think you've crushed it, and you feel successful, like a successful army, you've crushed the enemy, but the enemy still exists, and it's going to manifest itself in ways which you won't see. That's the okay, the heel. Like you're going. Because it's hiding in the grass, so to speak. It's all around, and it has different ways of manifesting itself. And it can attach itself to all different types of activities. And that's because it has the capacity to... It's very, very flexible. It's sublimation. It can change. It can obtain satisfaction. That's why the instinctual man is very, very dangerous. That's why it's very dangerous, because, for example, the aggressive instinct, which is essentially the desire to kill someone in a brutal kind of a way. But you're not surprised. See, most people are shocked about about Hitler. But how could he do such a thing? The shock, we're not shocked that he could do such a thing. And it's not just him. You see, it's thousands that joined along with him. Because we know that this is really the nature of the instinctual. Man is sadistic, man is brutal, and this is essentially, people shouldn't fool themselves. Those people who profess to be sharp shouldn't fool themselves, because they're nobody. And you see that even in Vietnam, the American soldiers are committing atrocities. Like, committing atrocities. Given the right circumstances, there's very few people that would not committed. These desires are not alien, they're part of human nature. What we should be shocked about is that a society should be set up, structures and barriers are set up to prevent it from happening. And we said the Chazal were aware of this, because they should pray for the health of the government, for the welfare of the government, because without the government, each person would swallow up his neighbor. Which is a very lowly people. What do you mean? I wouldn't do that. I'm a decent, civilized person. I can never do that. But you do see that whenever there's a blackout, a famous blackout, then all of a sudden people, right, losing this, that, and become animals. There's a book, as I was saying, there's a book called The Lord of the Flies, in which kids are left on an island without any of the restraints of civilization, and they degenerate into animalistic, all these sadistic forms and so forth. But even there's an hour, because they're attributing this to children. They're not sufficiently developed. But this is adults. Adults are the worst. That's the idea of who you ship Harosh. That in this battle, the weapon of the Isha, the weapon of Adam and her children, is to be able to repress it in the manifest form. That's essential for survival. And on two levels. First of all, on the level of the repression, the real character of the instinctual has to be repressed. But even insofar as it manifests itself, man can still deal with it directly. When a person has a desire to kill, he's conscious of that he has a desire to kill, so then he can crush it, he can suppress it. But the way in which the nachash will manifest itself will be through akir. And it has, by its ability to transform itself into different forms and to become associated with different activities where you don't see it. That's why you see, for example, that a lashon hara, for example, that man has the capacity to. That's why the instinctual is very dangerous in man, because it can be satisfied in sublimated form, in speech. That's what Chazal said, that the lashon hara partakes of avodah zarah, partakes of gilui arayos. Gilui arayos. Why? Because the sexual desire of man now has to seek other channels. So it can attach itself to other activities. The speech, talking about it, and gossip, and so forth, that's the satisfaction of the sexual instinct. And the aggressive, by talking about, by putting people down and talking about them, so that's really satisfying the aggressive in man. Now, that's not the direct desire. The direct desire, if you were to talk to the snake, if you were to bring it up, so to speak, you wouldn't say that my desire is to sit back and talk about somebody. The desire is to kill. But it's been, as a result of the fact that it's been suppressed, and as a result of the fact, you see, this wouldn't exist in any other being. That man has mechanisms, the way the energy in man is constructed, and man is a speaking being, nefesh chaya. But the Unkelus says, by nefesh chaya, it's the speaking, which means that nefesh chaya there, the speech over there, is part of the instinctual. That man can gratify his instinctual through speech, through a whole new activity. That's why it becomes the Eitzar becomes subtle and becomes more dangerous, more difficult to deal with. So that's why that is the Yata. You've got a strong weapon too. You see, that's a description of the situation. You see, the Nachash has to be weakened. It has to be repressed because the man can't deal with it in terms of its tremendous force. But it's going to come out in subtle ways. What I'm learning over here, I mean, I'll look up the alternative ways, but I'm learning it in line with the basic idea of enmity. Enmity means hostility. So hostility presupposes you have two enemies. Each one wants to destroy the other. So man is going to destroy you, but he can't destroy your road. So you think that that's the end of it. But no, you keep coming, you'll come up in a different way. See, so you're not going to be wiped out completely, but you're going to have to fight a guerrilla warfare. And that's basically that's the state of the enmity. That's the Ava. That is the Ava. That's the way I'm learning. Okay? Garachel Bain Zara. Well, Omar, hey, now he didn't say over here, Kol Yimei Chayecha. He didn't say Kol Yimei Chayecha over here. Okay? By Afar Tochel, it says Afar Tochel Kol Yimei Chayecha. But here it doesn't say that. Because the Eva will be removed in Yemos HaMashiach. Now that's very interesting, because in Yemos HaMashiach there's going to be a transformation in the nature of human energy, all of the desire, the whole desire of mankind will be for the knowledge of God. In other words, the Ramban explains that man will be then as he was prior to the Chet. So once that is the case, the Ava is only a result of the fact that the instincts now are fixated, the energy is fixated upon the instinctual. But when the energy is removed from the instinctual and it's directed towards the good, so then there's no Ava. There's no problem anymore. Now it exists in its proper, now the instinct in man exists. As long as it exists in its proper state, there's no Ava. It's only when it seeks to gain entree into an area where it doesn't belong. And that's the state that we're in right now. It wants to take over all the energy of man. And man can't tolerate such a thing. So there's an Ava. So we're talking about the question about the need, why the women have to be created from the man. And we had always said that that's because of the fact that since man had a son like him, so that his even in the area of the sexual needs, it wasn't simply an instinctual phenomenon, but it had to satisfy him in a psychological way. And the specific of the psychological has to do with the fact that man by nature is narcissistic. That is to say that all of his energy, his love, is directed towards himself. So therefore, the only way in which he can love an external being, it has to be the self as it manifests itself in an external being. So it's a different form of self-love. It's a different form, it's a higher form though, because it's outside of the immediate self. So then it does bring him, it does take him away from the primitive or infantile narcissism. And we see that in the mechanism of the parental love for the child. Even a person who likes children in general has a different, it's a different thing. I mean, all of his own personal energy is redirected and tied up to the particular child because it's from him. So that's a very, you see that. The only question is that everybody's asking is that this is true with regard to Adam and Chava. Okay, so he was conscious of the fact that it came from him, and in a very personal way. Okay, but now after that, we don't have that experience. Why doesn't each person have to re-experience that? How does it work for us? How is that psychological need satisfied for us? Because when you meet somebody, you don't have that sense that she's from you, she's a stranger. It's when you know clearly that she's from somebody else. I mean, when you say she's like you, it means that you may have the same emotions, same tastes and things. So that's the question. Okay. Yes, now what happens is, it means say like this. This pasuk over here, Zos Hapam, is also part of creation. Something new comes into existence which did not exist before. And what is that? An attraction to the woman. Now once that's internalized, and that becomes a part of the human psyche. Now that's part of the human makeup. You see? And that's why that is like genetic now. It's part of your constitution.
It becomes
he undergoes a change. As a result of this, he undergoes a change, and this becomes a part of the psyche. Now everyone within the species will relate to the will have a natural desire for the woman. It becomes a natural thing. One thing is like this, I'm just describing it roughly. I don't have it clear, but I'm just saying like this, is that beforehand there was nothing in man, there was no woman, and there was nothing in man that would elicit a desire for the woman. This is something which is not a, it just happens naturally. You, it's not something you taught. It's a natural phenomenon. As you grow up, and when you're at the right age, the hormones are there and so forth, at puberty, you meet a girl and you just have these feelings. I mean, you have no, they're programmed, so to speak. It's programmed within you. Now, given that a certain being, a certain type of a person, a certain type of a girl that matches your own particular needs, it evokes certain feelings. Now that didn't exist with Adam HaRishon. That did not exist.
So what did it do?
It came into being when he encountered the woman. So there was a change, there was a certain change in his emotional makeup. It's not just saying that he liked this woman. It means that man now acquired a certain attraction for a certain type of a being, but that was only because this being came from himself. So now the energy, you see, now all this thing becomes internalized and unconscious. Now he views woman, you see, it's not that he views woman, he stops and he thinks, oh, she came from me. He doesn't go through mental calculations. You see, now it's an instinctual thing. It's ingrained, it's an instinctual thing that man will be attracted to woman. What the Torah is telling us, though, is that at the outset, in creation, how God brought this, how did God bring this into existence in the first place? How is it that man should have such a desire for a being that's different than himself? The answer is because the being was one who went through this channel, that the energy of man was directed toward himself, and can only relate to himself. So God created a being from him, and now you have an unbelievable type of a thing. Himself, a being who was himself, who exists outside of himself, and that's what created the drive towards the woman, but that's now part of the psyche of man. So that every woman will automatically elicit that. However, had this not been the case,
And woman would have been created simultaneously with men. You would never have this phenomenon of a relationship. It would not have existed. The Pasuk comes out with Al Kenyazo. It said, I never really, I had different interpretations, though. I never really understood how important that Al Kenyazo is saying now this becomes a permanent part of the psyche of man. It's like, why is man attracted to certain things? This is the reason why. You see, it becomes embedded in his unconscious. But similarly, like when Adam sins, he acquired a conscience, and now you don't seem to acquire a conscience, the conscience is now part of your genetic makeup. It's there. And when you reach a certain age, it's going to be, now the attraction for woman, the fact that man is attracted to woman, right, now exists as part of your genetic makeup, it's within your psyche. And it just needs the circumstances to bring them to being. But when it comes to being, you're not going to stop and think, oh, it's because really she comes from me and all this. No, that's not the, that's the thing. Is that as a result of this, he acquires a new, yeah, this was needed to create that instinctual attachment. But once it's created, it's part of the psyche of man. It's passed down like anything else. The problem over here is that it's not such a questionable thing. How can you find a being for this kind of a creature and find a mate for him? It's not in his nature to have a mate. It's not in man's nature. And therefore, it requires new factors. The point over here is that what happens to Adam is not just Adam as a person, but becomes part of the nature of man, because he's in a state of creation. He's still in a state of being created. This is part of the story of creation. Right?
You must
think that the third degree that man prior to the creation of woman did not have that desire for woman. Didn't have it. All because that was said, well, the other one was a connector. Why did somebody say, what do you mean? He had a desire for woman, that's not what you would say today. You would say you have a desire for woman, you just don't have any first. Love was a connector means that you didn't have that phenomenon. You didn't have that desire for a woman. Because there was no woman, there was no such thing.
Why was he not 12 years old on the father?
Because he couldn't be satisfied either. He was in a state of frustration.
Right?
Yeah, right. Because he could not be completely satisfied in this way. Right? But then he didn't have a being with whom he could be satisfied. That's why he bought the animal. You see? So then he couldn't relate to the animal. So now a being was created, and when this being was created, it effectuated a fixation of the energy, so to speak, a direction, an attachment of energy towards an image, towards the woman. Oh! You see, and that's a process now, a process, an emotional process that occurred as well. Something new came into existence. Now man has within his psyche, what? An instinctual attraction to women. That's the truth. That exists. Now that becomes part of the human makeup, because this is the story of creation. Okay? So now it's part not just of the man, but of the human, and every being that's born will have that same attraction, that same instinctual makeup, just like anything else. Well, I think that story, although I'm not pushing it too far at this point, but this whole business of the Tardema, and then he awakes, and God brings it, God brings her to him. You see, everything is done over here. It's a whole new state. It's a change. There's a significant change that's taking place in this makeup. That's what the story is about as well. The story of the creation of woman is a development of man, that man develops. And he acquires a new instinctual attraction, which never existed before. But of course, once he acquires it, it becomes part of the unconscious inheritance of everybody, and then it just, you don't think about this anymore. But had this not occurred to begin with, it wouldn't be in existence. The Torah is describing how it comes into existence. And the question that it's raising is, how could this be? A being such as this is not going to be attracted to a woman, just like you see, wasn't attracted to the animals. But it had to be this way.
All right, now we continue the next party to be addressed is the woman. I'm not taking it up right now, but I'll point out that it should be of some interest in the order. First God addresses the Nachash, then the woman, and then the man, what the reason for that would be. But we'll, it's not a major issue at this point. El Ha'isha Amar, to the woman, he said, Harba Arba, I will greatly increase. Itzvonech Veheronech, the tzavon would indicate some type of pain. Atzvot is commonly referred to as a depression, right?
Sadness.
Sadness, yeah. This word is used, it's interesting to know that all the commentaries point out, this word is used in the punishment of Adam too. So bear that in mind, because we're going to try and fix the meaning to it. Well, the other mama, kishemat kol shtecha v'tzalcha v'neid asher tivitzicha leimor lo tzalcha v'menu, seems to be redundant, but anyways, arura hazam bavarecha, the earth shall be cursed because of you, or in relationship to you. Yitzava v'tzalcha v'menu, with sadness shall you eat from it, kol yimecha. So the term yitzavon appears in three consecutive sentences, and in the context seems to be, I mean, part of the onesh of it. Yitzavon, right? Each one will experience yitzavon. All right, harba harba yitzvonech veheronech, and heronech is the herion, the pregnancy, in other words. That is to say, it would appear that prior, had they not sinned, then she clearly would have been. In other words, it's not that pregnancy and childbirth now comes into existence. This is part of the scheme from Shesham Abraham's then, because who is going to propagate the species? It's clear. Right? This is not a new thing. That as a result of the sin, she now has the function of having children. Right? That's not the case.
And you also,
Pyramid Russians, that indicate that even on the first day they had children right away. The point of that is, again, that certainly she would have been the one who had children, but the process would have been very quick, and would have been easy. It would not have involved pain. And here it says, the etzev tail dibanim, again the term, the etzev with sadness. I don't know if sadness is such an accurate translation. Because Rashi says, tail dibanim, Rashi's not the only one, the other commentaries mentioned that tail dib means to raise children. Tsar gidul banim.
Yeah, what
else is it? Tsar. It's pain. Yeah, it's, I take it to mean it's pain. Of course, part of that pain. There's a reason why you use the word etzah, too. Because it's a certain kind of a quality of pain.
You're
right. Well, here she has both. If you're going to think about what a woman goes through in terms of pregnancy, you're going to think more in terms of physically painful. A whole, a body or system and so forth, physically, and then of course childbirth is the same thing. Though today it's with medication, anesthesia and all that, it's not that thing. Rashi has it beautiful, a quote from the Gemara. It's vonech, zed tzar gidul banim. That's a different kind of tzar. That's the tzar of raising children. Eironech, zed tzar of ibur. That is the tzar of the ibur is the pregnancy. Rashi has a beautiful, the etzev tail dibanim, every word works out. Tail dibanim, he takes, to refer literally to the pain of the labor. So there's three pains over here. There's the pain of the pregnancy, then there's the pain of the labor, and then there's the pain of the raising the children. So that's part one of the puzzle. Okay, fine. So of course we'd have to understand what this has to be. Well, we're operating with the concept of mida k'neged mida, right?
But it also seems,
so what's the point of studying, having shiurim and trying to study the subject of raising children? It seems it's part of the to eliminate the problem, to reduce the problem. What's the point of it all if it's part of the curse? The answer is, that's a very important answer over here. What would you say to that? How would you answer that? So I just said, it seems to me that if there is a proper methodology of raising a child, so it's not going to reduce difficulties and pains. That's an impossibility. It's part of life. However, one of the byproducts should certainly be that it reduces a lot of the pain and stress, and it should be on the whole. In general, that would be true in any area. If you have a right way of raising, of training an animal, training a dog or whatever the case may be, and a wrong way. So the wrong way, first of all, it's bad for the in terms of bringing about the result, but also, since you're going against its nature or you're spoiling it or whatever, it's going to cause you a lot of extra pain that you didn't need. Right? So,
I think that my
personal opinion would be that if the person uses the correct methodology, he's able to do so. I mean, to control, maybe a little bit more painful at first, but that's it's true. People are drawn to the wrong way because it's the lazy man's way. It's easier at first, so they don't want to confront their own emotion. They don't want to have to put up with the tirade of the child. So they give in and they spoil. So, but if you're going to use the proper method, you're going to experience pain at first. Because you're not going to give in to the natural flow. But it should work out that in the long run it should be easier. It has to be that way. Now, if that's the case, so Mel's question is, for 1 second, it's going against the curse. It's going against the curse. The curse is the curse. It's against God's will. It's flowing. What are you trying to undo? What are you trying to undo with that which is supposed to be? It would seem to be, it reminds us of our old Gan Eden pill question. If we found the pill, it would make man the way he was before he sinned. Perfectly, willing to do the good without any conflict, without any, should we give the pill? And the answer is that no, it's against the will of God. God's will is that man should have a conflict and should have to choose the right thing to do. So you can't market that pill. So let's put it this way, there are two things over here. There's the pain that the woman experiences, that's the physical pain of pregnancy and childbirth. That we're not talking about. Alright? Let's do better than one thing. What about the pain involved in child raising? Because of the difficult nature of children, human. And all the other... See, in all of the... It's interesting why... We'll try and understand why it has to be this way. In the other species, it's not difficult. It's not that difficult. The children reach maturity and are simple, straightforward, they move toward maturity. What about that element? The element of having to cope with all the emotions and problems that come up in the relationship. So I think Max is right. That doesn't mean that is the new reality that men have to deal with, and it's good for men to have to deal with that reality. So we can deal with it. It's like any, in other words, like it's a Yipi Hashem, before that part of the difference, in the mouth of God, Yipi Elyon. What does that mean? We describe all the goods to God and so forth. It means that God changes, brings about a situation, but how it relates to you depends upon what you do, how you relate to it. So man was deserving of a change over here in terms of the situation. The situation creates problems. It's not an evil. It doesn't mean to say now that this area is going to be an evil. It's going to destroy you. There's no way, it's an impossibility to raise children. No one's saying that. You see? But it's going to be whereas before it was not a source of difficulty, of pain, it was smooth. It wasn't something you think about, have to worry about, see, and so on. Now it's something you have to worry about, you have to deal with it. It's a problem area. So, yeah, I mean, that's right. So if you don't use your seichel, so then it's going to be misery. If you do use your seichel, so then it's an area which forces you to use your seichel. So you should use your seichel. And if you do use your seichel, you're not going to be able to eliminate. It's an impossibility. Anyone knows that. This is an area which you can't reduce to a science. It's an impossibility. It's a tough area. But since everything in structures according to Chachma, a person who does use this Chachma consistently would be better in the area. But if you were able to come up with a better method, so that's good. It's good for man because it's forcing man to use the Seichel. It's obvious that that's what really God wanted. God didn't want to torture a person. Yeah, I'll throw a torture. God doesn't operate that way. God doesn't torture a person. So whenever God creates a situation whose natural tendency is to produce problems for man, which can become painful to man, is for a reason. It's a man's benefit, and man is supposed to respond. So it's proper, it's wholly appropriate, just like it is wholly appropriate to study agriculture now. Means before God cursed the earth, you wouldn't have to deal with agriculture. You wouldn't have to study agriculture. You'd be free, you'd study other things. Now you got to study agriculture. Why? Because it's thorns and thistles. So it's not contrary. It's not God's will that you should be in a state of suffering. It's God's will that this area should be one which is problematic, which produces problems, and to which you now have to respond. And you should respond as an Adam, an intelligent person who responds intelligently. So you should use your mind. God wants you to use your mind to confront the challenges of existence. But the curse is that this became a challenge of existence. When had you not sinned, it would not have. Something which seems to be entirely differently. The Elisheh Peshukaseh. And to your man will be your desire. Your desire will be Tavascha. Most of the Farshim take it to mean your title. Your desire will be towards your man. Well, what's new about that? What was it supposed to be? Wasn't that the whole idea of the marriage in the first place? And what's his desire? Who does he desire? Vuhu Yimshalva. And he will rule over you. Ah, that's a pact. That's a pact idea. That's gone. This is the whole curse for the woman. Basically, there's two parts. And the underlying question, I would say, is like the why? Or what's the concept? Why is it necessary for her? Why is it necessary for her to have this punishment? Now, there's two ways we can go. Either we can stop right here and try and work, think of ideas. Or else we can proceed to the punishment of other ones, see whether there's any connection between the two. You know what I'm saying? It would, since they both committed the same chait, basically, okay, we showed that there was a difference in the character of the chait, but essentially, in both cases, it was a distortion of their disobedience to God, whatever the cause was. One would ask another question, which would seem to be one punishment should fit both, but no. So let's at least have in mind the context of the punishment of Adam. Adam Amar, to the man he said, Kishamata l'kol ashtecha. This is what we said before, that his sin was Kishamata l'kol ashtecha. Vatochom eneit ashed tzivisicha. In other words, for you it was just a question of who to listen to. He was not overpowered by Taiva, but you had a problem. Who to obey? The voice of the woman or the voice of God? And you chose to listen to your wife, right? I said you shouldn't eat from it. Arura adam baburecha. Then the earth will be cursed because of you. With pain shall you eat from it. Kol yemei chayecha, all the days of your life. Kol yemei chayecha is very interesting. What else? It'd be a little bit superfluous. Now the famous Bakot Fadarda Tatsmiakwa. And thorns and thistles will it sprout forth for you. What's the chiddush? Again, it's redundant. The Achalta is Eitzev Hasada, and you will eat the grass of the field. This is very difficult. Because other than this O'Grady who was shot down last week, he survived on. Maybe that was. Every pasuk has a specific situation for a certain situation. But he ate grass, right? No, but what does it mean you'll eat the grass in the field? Then in Yitzchak, by the sweat of your brow will you eat bread. Okay. Now that's a problem, because first he's being told that he will eat grass, and there's no Zeah. And now it doesn't mention that he'll have the Zeah Tafecha, sweat of his brow. Now he's being, so what's, first of all, what's he going to eat? Is he going to eat grass or is he going to eat bread? The answer to that would be, I don't know people that eat grass. So I don't know what that means altogether. And b'zeis hafecha tochalechem, okay, ha'tshuvchel ha'damo, until you return to the earth, ki mimena lukachta, for from it were you taken, ki yocharata, for you are the earth, v'yalech ha'tashuv, and to earth will you return. That yud-tesel is altogether. What's the point? That seems to be completely extraneous. But anyways, we don't have to. I'm not going to darshan every word now. I just want this. So the punishment for Adam in general, the punishment of Adam seems to be
what? The curse that the land will be cursed, the pain of what? Of producing food. The other thing is that not everybody is an agriculturist. Not everybody's a farmer. That's why I didn't become a farmer, because of this process. So first of all, is it just in farming? It's not, you see later on in the third Tanya in Hevel, Chazal say that that's why Hevel became a shepherd. He said this doesn't make sense. Right? That's what the rest of it. But is that it? Is it that pashut? That it just applies to farming? That seems to be the curse. I mean, everything else, code for Darda, Tatsumia, Kalach, seems to be connected to that. So forth. And then, Bezeh Tafecha Tokhalecha, by the sweat of your brow, you'll eat bread. Alright, let's translate it. There's no need to keep the suspense going. What's the basic curse over here? It's not really farming, essentially. What is it? Yeah, now you're in a, you're out of Gan Eden, is basically what it is. This is a whole new reality. In Gan Eden, everything was there for, all you had to do was the Avdol Hashemah, but you failed that test. All you had to do was guard the garden, you have this beautiful garden, and all you have to do is keep lock the gates at night. You know, and trim the weeds or something like that, but everything was there for you.
You know, weeds,
no weeds, the hedges, whatever it is, you're right, I don't know. Now it's the Zeh Tafecha Tocholah. Now you've got this tremendous, now you've got to face the struggle for existence. That's it. That's the story of human life, essentially. That's what all the past, not to say that if people, most people, if they were removed from the struggle, would die anyway. They couldn't survive. It's both a kalala, but it's a necessity. Because as a result of man's nature after the chase, he couldn't survive without the struggle. That's why you see, I mean, you do see people that are somehow able to escape it. You know, the idle wealthy, people who are very wealthy and idle, they don't have to work for it. They've inherited it, or they want to learn this lottery, it's destroyed them. They can't live that way. I mean, they dissipate as humans. They didn't even wind up on drugs, whatever, they can't function. But nevertheless, it's still, it's sort of, but then if you're involved in the struggle, it's because they have to, it's not a pleasant experience, apparently. So we have to understand what's the reason for it. That's the general idea of the curse for Adam. That's the punishment of Adam. But he now has to confront the world of reality he never had to deal with before. You know, the world everyone's trying to escape from. Okay. Now, bearing that in mind, let's go back to the caller of the Isha. Yeah. She doesn't have this problem. She has her own problem. But she doesn't have to face, doesn't, she doesn't have a Zeh Tafecha Tocholecha.
Deb is asking a good kasha, that at least the Tzar Gidol Bonim is not something which is only for the mother. Alright, up to that point, the Tzar of the pregnancy and the Leda, that's clearly for the woman, but the raising of children is by both. The father also has Tzar Gidol Bonim. So, it's a good kasha. Rashi and Pazikei.
So Rashi says, the Yisam Kelokim Yotzrei Olamot, creators of world. Alright? And that was part of the desire. Interesting, that's a hard pasuk, pasuk vav, which describes the taiva that she had for the tree. She saw the Ivainayim, but the Nechma the Eif Lahaskia. It was desirous for wisdom. So part of it was a certain intellectual desire, curiosity. And that was included. It's not just a simple, it wasn't just simply a physical or a sexual desire. But it was a desire for knowledge. Which we normally would say is a good thing, but this is a bad thing. The second one is easy. One is subservience to the man. That's important. And the first one would seem to be connected to what?
Children.
It's giving her it's giving her a task. It does two things. It gives her a task. Of course, she always she'd be bearing children with prizes, that would not really be rather pissed.
Right.
It would be something which was a part of nature, natural thing. It wouldn't be a difficult task. Right? But now it's making it into a burden. Now it's giving her a task which is burdensome and painful, that of having children. She needs that. And in addition, she has this factor of subservience. What's the underlying thread here? In one sense, both man and woman need a task now. That we see. That I explained. The answer to that is clear, because in the original, this would have been bad. In the original situation, this would have been a distraction. Because what was the purpose of Adam? The purpose of Adam was not to divert energy on basic necessity. The attainment that God provided for you. So since the purpose of Adam was to be involved in the study of Chachma, so God eliminated all the diversions. Now, even having children would have been a diversion, but it was a minimalistic type of thing. Why would God make it into a burden? Tzadik Lulam is not a bracha. You got to expend a tremendous amount of energy, and it's painful. That's the summer. It's a painful type of a thing. Well, to the extent that it's painful and it wears you down and wears you out, doesn't it take away from your ability to learn? But the point is that as a result of the fact that man became, by nature of being, that doesn't want to learn, his energies are now directed towards the fantasies, so now he needs something to hold him in check. So of course we learn that God created the agency, the superego, that's an internal thing. But now what's he going to do? Now he needs a task. You see, now roles. Now man is responsible for his own sustenance. God is not going to provide the sustenance anymore. Man is responsible to retain and maintain the whole human situation, which really consists of two things. To provide the necessities that mainly fall to the man, and of course the propagation of the species. The propagation of the species now becomes a task, an obligation, a task, and it's a painful one, because he really can't escape from it either, because the maternal instinct, he has the instinct, well, essentially that's the woman. The woman has the maternal instinct. And so she's caught up in it. And in doing so, it becomes something which is, now, what we have to explain, why is it so painful? I can understand, what's the Yitzhava? Why must it be a painful thing? I can understand why the task is necessary now. Because people, like you said, the idle rich, people that have nothing to do, so they're just going to follow all kinds of crazy fantasies. So they have to have a responsibility. But people today, a lot of people, you know, they long for some kind of responsibility. They feel unfulfilled. Women that can't have children, it's a tremendous problem today. And they feel unfulfilled. I have no one to live for. I have no purpose. They need the purpose to live for. It's going, they don't have any sense of fulfillment. So, okay. But why must it be so painful? You know, Eric is saying a very good thing. That, see, there's a bit, that's a very powerful emotion. That Yotzer Elonos. That's an egotistical emotion. It's a narcissistic emotion. Which means that she had trouble accepting the given reality. She didn't know a place in the school, and she wanted to change. There are changes in the reality. Which it's a very strong emotion. And today, one man always has that, but today especially with science, scientists have this notion that they're going to recreate. And when they recreate in their own image, they have this capacity. Something they're really interested in. They're interested in gaining dominion and power. Now, the woman was then given the task of raising children. But I think that the pain has the effect of breaking down her narcissism. I mean, she becomes disfigured and so on. But more than that, reality is not in accordance with her desires. A person it's a humbling kind of a thing. You got to contend with a situation which is not in line with the way you would like it to be. So therefore, she is given a task.
See, it's also with there were two emotions, by the way. In the kisavi laying ayam, which means the sexual drive and the romantic and so forth. That's tempered now by the fact that it's connected to the desire for children, and that has the effect that with the Chazal would say that at the time she has children, she curses her husband. So, which means to say that the whole thing becomes distasteful to her. It breaks that down, it brings her more into the world of reality. And also, I would say, let me finish my point, is that the Alishech Shukaseh, I mean, there's many different ways you can learn it. Which means, to me it means, is that she no longer has direct access to the world of reality. In other words, beforehand, they were sort of equal. They both could study. They both had the capacity to confront the world, to study the world, and so on and so forth. But a change takes place. Now she doesn't have any direct access. The man, in other words, is stronger in a sense. The man is the one who goes out and confronts the world of reality, and she has to operate through the man. She becomes dependent, a certain dependent. Hu Yimshalach means that she now becomes dependent upon the man. And that's necessary. Because given that Yotzer Olamos, that that was her desire to be a Yotzer Olamos, then it would be too dangerous. If she had that capacity, in other words, like I'm saying, or even men, a sub from that, it doesn't mean, of course you're a man, doesn't mean you don't have it, but I'm saying, on the whole, women are more prone towards, you know, the romantic and the fantasies and so on and so forth, and the emotional. So less willing to subordinate themselves to reality in general. So that, and that's why you see that throughout history, I mean, women have not been on the forefront. Of course, women will say that's because of the women's structure, but it's been the nature of women. They're not the ones who are the creative thinkers. And the ones who make the breakthroughs and so forth. They're not the scientists who make the breakthroughs. So, in other words, it puts the woman in a certain position. That she obtains a role, because this is a natural necessity of the chait, that man now is responsible. He has a role which he never would have had before. And that role diverts a great deal of his energy, which is necessary because otherwise he'd be involved in all kinds of crazy fantasies. So he has to have a role. And her role is now it's suited to her nature. Since she's the one who has to have the children, her role is primarily with the children. And that is good, that's where the pain comes in. The pain has the effect of humbling her, and forcing her to deal with reality. So it's something which can respect her nature. And secondarily, she cannot go out on her own and confront the world of reality. She's dependent upon the man. And this power then, the power to able to confront reality, you know, technology and science and so forth, is more vested in the man than it is in the woman. Okay, let me just pause. General illness. Yeah, Chazal say that when you go visit a chola, the shechina is by the head of the chola, right? You shouldn't sit next to the head of the chola, by his head, because it's in front of the shechina. So what kind of an idea is that? It means that the illness has a sobering effect. It breaks down man's narcissism. The thing which separates man from his creator is his tremendous desire to be. Man can't accept his status. He can't accept the fact that he's a created being. There's something within him which rebels against that, and he has this need to feel that he is more than just a person. That he's a shutta. He has divine powers. That's the whole struggle of man, is to accept it. All of, by the way, that's the whole idea of idolatry. It's basically the inability of man to accept the fact that he is a created being. And that he has nothing at all to do with existence, with the terms of existence, with the way the world ought to be. He has absolutely nothing to do with it. He can't tolerate that. So that's why you see deification of all the stories that we're going to be encountering. A man deifies himself. Or he identifies with another person. It's vicarious. Or even worshipping idols, is that's where a person is willing to invest. He can separate it from his own self, but he can't go any further than investing it in a being with whom he feels he can have a relationship, he can manipulate. That's not an idol. That's what the ego was. We needed a being that we felt that we can control. They can't tolerate the idea that they're totally cut off. They're absolutely cut off from the source of creation. Yeah. So, the pain, you see, that stems from a certain narcissistic feeling in man. And suffering, when a person's illness is a... Illness is something which brings a person closer to God. When he's frail and he's ill, he realizes the reality of things. He realizes the reality, he sees that he's just a part of nature, and certain truths become very clear to him, and he becomes closer to God. That's the meaning of that chazal, that stay, unless the person is crazy. I mean, an intelligent person will learn from it. So the suffering of pregnancy, it has an effect upon her vanity, some vanity there. All the emotions over there, that whole romantic thing, you know, that comes very well. It says, well, that could explain, by the way, it's not just, I mean, today that everyone can explain it as being hormonal changes. Not negating that, but, you know, the moon swings and all that have a lot to do with the psychological. It doesn't have to be explained purely, it's psychological. Psychologically, it's a painful thing. They don't like they that's not the way something aligned with their self-image. Yeah. Eric has mentioned that according to Rashi, the first one mentioned is this vonesh, which is yidul mana. I would say that conceptually, that's the worst. It wouldn't be so bad. A person can undergo a certain amount of pain. First, you're going to go with a certain amount of pain. You don't mind working as hard and all that, but then you have the reward. So that the essential thing over here is that after going through the pain, because she has this tremendous desire to have the child, and then when you're looking forward to the reward, that's the real. The real pain is the evil one. That's much more painful and more difficult. You have to go in the middle of the night and you can get sick. You know, I mean, there's an endless amount of things. The others wouldn't be so bad. In other words, the Heronech and the Lega wouldn't be so bad if there was no talking to one. If you say it's okay, it's worth it, it's a great thing, it's a wonderful fulfillment. So then you say it's a small price to pay. Like Yaakov said, you know, it worked 7 years, you know. Maybe that's an easy thing. But try to keep things in perspective. That's why I'm just saying that the point is that I would say that if you didn't have the Tzar Yidul Banim, then everything would be... So it's 9 months. It's not the worst thing in the world. And then you'd be happy. But you're not going to be happy either, because then the fun really begins. And that's gonna appear like a joke compared to the Tzar Yidul Banim. The Tzar Yidul Banim is a tough thing. There are two areas where a person is disappointed in life, I believe, emotionally. One is in marriage. For many people, it's a big disappointment. In terms of disappointment, in the sense of what they anticipated it to be like, they have no idea. People have no idea what the actual reality is like until they experience it, and it's different. Even if it's good, I mean, it's completely different than when you're moving towards it. It's like you're being trapped, like you're being drawn along by a certain image. And then when you experience it, honest couples will say it's not what we thought it was. Whether it's good or bad is a different issue, but it's certainly not what I thought I was getting into.
You still got more in
the top. The other area is in having children. Because people have a very powerful desire to have children. You see when the woman gets pregnant, they're excited, she's happy, she can't wait, and all that. But well, again, there's another fantasy. What a person is doing is taking an experience. They like babies, they bounce to their friends, they play with the babies, they're so cute, and then they have to leave and they say, you know, wouldn't it be so great if I had this baby every day? And they somehow imagine, and even if they know, and even if they've been, they've seen what babies can have tantrums and all that, but then another thing comes in. And that is, and it's just like with the marriage thing, they've been to couples that have fight, they know. I mean, they're not talking about stupid people, everybody knows that cutties, but then there's another emotional thing.